Hello and welcome to another episode of Peter Hill Explains, and this time I'll be doing the 2017 HSC New South Wales in Australia HSC exam, and hopefully you will have this online. When it comes online, I'll put a link in the associated blog for you, but hopefully you'll have done this before and you're listening to this on the tram home, or the tram, or the train, or ferry to school, and sharpening up your understanding of physics along the way. So let's, without further ado, we're at question 18, ready to go on. Only a few more multiple choice questions to go. Let me read this question to you. A particle of mass M and charge Q travelling at a velocity V enters a magnetic field of magnitude B and follows a path shown. There's a diagram here showing the particle travelling along, entering the magnetic field and experiencing a centripetal or center rushing force, a side force, which changes its direction downwards as it enters the field B. Then it goes on to say a second particle enters a magnetic field of magnitude 2B and a velocity of half V and follows an identical path. So initially we should write some equations. Working on F equals MA, the F is QVB. It's quite a convenient formula, QVB, the charge times the velocity times the magnetic field. It's convenient for us here in Sydney because QVB also stands for an old central shopping centre in Sydney called the Queen Victoria Building, rather a nice one to see if you come to Sydney. But so QVB is the force on a particle, and there's no other complexity to the equation. The simplicity of metric or physics equations with the system international units is that everything's been adjusted and sorted out, so you have simple formulas. So the force on the particle, any particle, charged particle moving in a magnetic field, is a centripetal or center rushing force, side force, and in that one, just to repeat it, it's QVB. Now that will equal, stepping back to the overarching idea of F equals MA, the M times the center rushing force, the centripetal force is mv squared on r. V squared on r is the centripetal acceleration, m times the centripetal acceleration. So we now, going back again, have qvb equals mv squared on r. I'm going to have to write this equation out for the first particle and then the second particle with the appropriate subscripts. But even at this stage, we can, because we're not told, we can let r equals 1 and divide both sides by V. So we get a simplified equation of QB equals MV. Now at this stage, we're asked the second part of the question, what is the mass and charge of the second particle? So at this stage, we want to get a mass-charge ratio, because that's what essentially we're being asked. So to get a mass charge ratio, we divide both sides by Q, and we're not interested in the velocity hanging over there, so we divide both sides by V. So B on V equals M on Q. Now B is being doubled and Q and Q is been halved. Correction, not Q has been halved, but V has been halved. So B on V is 4 times. So the mass charge ratio for the second particle is 4 times what it used to be. And that sort of makes sense, because the force on the particle is the same, but the centripetal acceleration required is much less because it's travelling more slowly in for the centripetal acceleration to change its path. So the mass is to the charge is four times greater. And we look down the options. Option A is M and Q. The mass and charge is unchanged. Option B is the mass is half and the charge is four times. So it's saying here that that's a mass-charge ratio, but that mass-charge ratio there is a quarter of the mass to the charge. The next option is the reverse, 4m and one single q, which is the answer. And the final option is m and half q. So the answer so far for this question is 4m and q. At this stage, I wouldn't panic. It's a lot easier to do it on the page with a pen and paper. Now looking at question 19, and there's a picture of the Earth's magnetic field and two youngish people, I can say that now because I'm so old, with a skipping rope and your typical wire skipping rope, and flipping this skipping rope presumably in the Earth's magnetic field and measuring a current. Now, of course, we actually do this to measure the Earth's magnetic field. But let's go back to the question, the text of the question. The Earth's magnetic field is shown in the following diagram. And they have a diagram of the Earth and magnetic field lines leaving the South Pole and entering the North Pole. So the Earth itself has the North pole of its magnet in the South Pole of the Earth. Try and get your mind around that. And the arrows are pointed, are put halfway through these actual field lines. Two students standing a few metres apart on the equator, XY, which you can see marked up there, where the Earth's magnetic field is parallel to the ground, i.e. In this case, seen from the southern hemisphere, we're in the southern hemisphere, so we imagine ourselves looking this way, the magnetic field lines are entering the page. Hold the loop of copper between them. Just read this. Part of the loop is rotated like a skipping rope as shown, while the other part remains motionless on the ground. And they show this rotating. Now, it's rather confusing the way it's drawn because you can, depending on the way that your brain interprets this two-dimensional picture, you can interpret A as being closer to you, and it's looping up, going through A, B, down through C and D. Or you can imagine them rotating it clockwise or anti-clockwise. But the question goes this. At what point, this is A, B, C or D, of the rotation does the maximum current flow in a direction P to Q through the moving parts of the wire? So again, in this case, when you're looking at the electromotive force, you obviously stick your fingers in the direction of the magnetic field, and from the southern hemisphere, which we in Australia are standing, we point our fingers towards the page. Now, what we want to do is actually say that the current is going from P to Q, that's from left to right. So we place our fingers, our palm, saying that these positive charges are being pushed from P to Q. So that's good. So if we do that, we realise that our finger is pointing down, and quite conveniently, sidestepping all these mental gymnastics of interpretation of the diagram, C is marked on the diagram at the point that the wire is pointing down. So essentially, when the copper rope is going from the top to the bottom, do you get the maximum current going through. Our final question for this segment is question 20, and it's the special relativity question. It says the length of a spacecraft measured by an observer is 3.57 meters as the spaceship passes ahead with a velocity of 0.7 c. C is the speed of light. So this is going fairly fast. At what velocity would the spaceship be moving for the observer if it was measured at a length of 2.5 meters? So this is a little bit tricky. So you've seen that it's travelling past, and you can see that its length, and you know that it will have a proper length slightly longer than that if the spaceship landed beside you. And you're saying, what greater speed must it travel to actually see a contraction to a smaller length? The initial length that you measure it at is at 3.57, and the length that you want to get it down to, you want it to travel faster to contract to a length of 2.5 metres. I may not have read that 2.5 the last time I went through. Now, in general, you really have to commit. You can actually work this out on paper. So the length contraction is a contraction number, so it must be a number less than 1 for length contraction. And you have a basic formula, the square root of 1 minus V on C all squared. So the V on C, you just put that ratio in there. So it's 1 minus 0.7 all squared, the square root of. And from the top of my head, I know that that will lead you to roughly 70%. And we'll have to just go through it. The formulas, the speeds of light that you really should commit to memory for contraction is 60%. The speed of light leads to an 80% factor that you put in front of, or length contraction factor. So if something's travelling 60% of the speed of light, that will give you a 80% of the proper length it goes to. And this is just Pythagorean ratios. This is rather a neat number where you get a 60 and 80% when you put it through the square root. So it's really saying that 36 plus 64 equals 100. It's the a similar ratio that 9 plus 16 equals 25. There's a couple of these, I think they're called golden ratios. But in essence, you really need to hold in your head a series of length contraction speeds and length contractions. So I'll just go through the ones that I particularly have in my head. Is 60% speed of light, 0.6c leads to an 80% reduction. 1 on the square root of 2c leads to a 1 on the square root of 2 length contraction. This is the square root of 1 minus a half is the square root of a half. It's one of those things. So this is the crossover point where your speed as a fraction of light equals your your length contraction. A similar use of formula, if you are travelling 80% of the speed of light, you have a 60% factor of contraction. And another magical number is the square root of 3 on 2, the speed of light, 0.886, the speed of light, leads to a length contraction of exactly half. And basically, with these figures in mind, you can pretty well just bluff your way through most problems. Now here, It's roughly 0.7c, but if you do the maths, it gives you a 0.7 contraction. And just looking at that, if I double that 3.5, that's 7 on 10 or 70%. Looking at that, the proper length is around 5 metres. You can just do that in your head. And the contraction is to 2.5 metres. So it's at a greater speed, 2.5 metres, just going through your head. But you can actually sit down and grind through the maths. But if you've done enough of these problems, you should be able to see it. So the answer, going through all the options here, you've got 0.49c. That's because you'll probably get a factor of 2 in there. 0.707c. I think that might be one of the square root of 2. Another option C is 0.714c. Still not enough to give you a contraction of 2, so you should have those factors in head. And we have here something which is sticking out like a sore thumb, 0.866c, which is the correct answer. So that concludes the multiple choice section. And of course, the focus on me is just improving my ability to do podcasting and help people. Overall, I hope to be able to do full exams much more quickly. After this, I'll go off and dutifully talk you through the long written answers section. And of course, in this case, I'll be able to use some of my skills I have had for correcting and examining the HSC for the past couple of years. Unfortunately, this year, the politics and the stars were not aligned for me. I'm not marking the HSC exam as seen fit by people, I suppose, who really don't know me. They said, no, look, we don't think you should do it. And so trying to increase my skill, I've taken on to podcasting, and I've obviously looked at the technical side and the skill side of podcasting, and with time hope to develop my speed and accuracy to quickly get the information to you without a large cost to me in terms of time and preparation. So I'll be podcasting to you soon about the next section of the exam. But until then, please keep on doing science and looking through past exams and grinding through them. Thank you for listening. That's been Peter Hill speaking to you.